Good morning, everybody, and a very pleasant Saturday to you, wherever you may be. Pull up a chair, because after a very long wait, it's finally time. It's time for Expansion Baseball. So today I'm going to be answering a question, and that question is, which of the 14 expansion teams had the most successful expansion draft? And before I answer the question, I'm just going to introduce the players briefly. Pat Gillick remarked that he would expect it to take 10 years for an expansion team to emerge into a perennial contender. And Gillick oversaw the early years of two expansion franchises, the Houston Colt 45s and the Toronto Blue Jays. We will be using three metrics to answer the question. Number one, how well did each of the expansion franchises perform in their first decade in the major leagues? Number two, how well did the players selected in the expansion drafts contribute to their teams? And question three, how effective was the statistical output of the expansion players in their first decade in each franchise? And the question will be answered using wins above replacement. Now, there's two kinds of players I'm going to be looking at. There are the players who were actually drafted in the expansion drafts, and what I call regeneration players, the players who were traded for players selected in the expansion draft. I'll give you a good illustration. The Montreal Expos, their expansion draft, selected Jesús Alou, Skip Gwynn, and Jack Billingham among their players. They were traded in January of 69 for Rusty Staub. Alou, Billingham, and Gwynn would be considered drafted players, and Le Grand Orange would be considered an expansion player. Similarly, Staub was traded in 1972 to the New York Mets for Tim Foley, Mike Jorgensen, and Ken Singleton. They would also be considered regeneration players. In fact, the Rusty Staub trade continued to generate players for the Expos up until 1985 when Mike Ramsey left the team. Now, before I proceed, we're going to do a little bit of audience participation. Does anybody have a guess which team is going to finish first? Anybody want to take a guess? Yes, sir. Good guess. Mr. Cohen.
Kansas City Royals.
Kansas City Royals. Is there anybody else who thinks Kansas City Royals? Fair representation, including a Kansas Cityan over here. Anybody else? Any other teams?
Rockies.
Any other?
Rockies.
Yes?
I'm thinking the Marlins.
The Marlins? Anybody else?
The Los Angeles.
That's a good guess. They're all good guesses. Don't go away. We'll be right back with the answer. Hold that thought. My hypothesis was that the Kansas City Royals would finish first and that the Toronto Blue Jays would finish second. So the first question, the overall performance of a team in the first 10 years. I gave 1 point for any team to finish 500, 2 points for any team to finish 550, and three for any teams to finish 600. Now, who said the Arizona Diamondbacks? You, John. Well, for this part of the question, the Arizona Diamondbacks finished first with 12 points. They won 100 games in 1999 and then 92 in 2001 when they won the World Series. Kansas City finished second with 11 points. They won 85 games in 1971, followed by American League West titles from 76 to 78. There were three teams who finished last for this category with zero because they did not have a winning record in their first 10 years. The Expos didn't have theirs until 1979. The Mariners until 1991, and the Rays until 2008 when they faced the Phillies in the World Series. Question number two. For how many years did players selected in the drafts and acquired in trades contribute to their teams? 5 years, 1 point. 10 years, 2 points. Kansas City Royals finished first with 53 points. Their expansion draft in 1968 generated players through trades such as Hal McRae, Amos Otis, Freddie Pautek, Marty Patton, and Steve Mingry, who was from Kansas City. All were still with the team in 1978 when they won their third division championship, and McRae remained with the team right up until 1987. And there's Hal McRae. Blue Jays were second with 50 points. Jim Clancy and Ernie Witt were selected in the expansion draft. They were both still there in 1988, and they both contributed to the drive of 85, their first pennant race, as did Rance Mullinix and Damaso Garcia. And it is pronounced Damaso. And does anybody know, certainly the Blue Jays fans would know, the irony about the card I selected. Does anybody know why that card is important? That is a... Huh? Nope. That is a Toronto Fire Department safety set from 1986, and that was the year that Damaso Garcia set his Blue Jays uniform on fire. He was not a Blue Jay anymore in 1987. He's not a kamikaze. He left the Yankees 7 years before that. Houston tied for third place with the Florida Marlins with 47 points each. Tampa Bay finished last with 10, and Arizona was in 13th place with 15 points. Now the third question, how effective was the statistical output of the expansion players? In other words, war, what is it good for? Just by a show of hands, how many were here at the 2001 Sabre Convention in Milwaukee? Fair representation. Of those hands, how many saw Bill James' presentation? Well, you were at the dawning of a revolution in statistical analysis because that was when Bill James unveiled win shares and wins above replacement, which is defined as the number of wins a player is responsible for beyond the replacement level at that player's position. How many wins does a player's presence expect to produce over an average replacement at the same position? First-year teams, Kansas City Royals were first with 26.6 WAR, and the last team, 1993 Rockies, with 6.1. Looking at the first decade, the top finisher was once again the Kansas City Royals, 184.8. Four players, Amos Otis, Al Fitzmaurice, Hal McRae, and Freddie Patek, contributed a WAR of 89.5 between 1969 and 1978. Despite their humble beginnings as the Seattle Pilots and as skeletons, the Milwaukee Brewers actually finished second with a WAR of 151.1. So the people who said Seattle Pilots, well, nice job. As the team's general manager from 1970 to 72, Frank Trader Lane made several blockbuster deals which formed the makings of a contender in Milwaukee in 1978, so within the 10-year range. And four Brewers players, Don Money, George Scott, Jim Colburn, and Johnny Briggs, contributed a WAR of 73.4 in a Milwaukee uniform between 70 and 78. Now, who can tell me, if you look at that picture of the Boomer, what are those things hanging around his neck? Anybody know? Well done, second baseman's teeth. Tampa Bay, big surprise, finished in last again with a WAR of 36.9. The Mets weren't much better with 41.8, and finishing just ahead of them was Houston with 69.4. Now we're going to give the answer to the question. The envelope, please. Finishing in last place, is anybody surprised? Tampa Bay with 47 points. They finished last in 9 of their first 10 years, spared only by the 2004 Toronto Blue Jays. They won 70 games only once in 2004, and they had an aggregate WAR of 36.9. So that's, if you look at the WAR of the expansion players of their first 10 seasons, it was 36.9 for all the players. 13th place, New York Mets. They averaged only 56 wins between 1962 and 1968. There were only four players on the 69 Mets who were generated by the expansion draft, and of those four, only Tommy Agee was of any significance. Their aggregate WAR was 41.8. Next on the agenda, Seattle Mariners, 115 points. No winning seasons, as I'd mentioned before, between 1977 and 1986.
How many people can identify the guy on the right in that photo?
Well done. And how about the left side of the photo? Who said Veda Pinson? The winner gets a cigar, Veda Pinson. Only five last place finishes. By contrast, Tampa Bay had 9. Their aggregate WAR was 87.6.
That's what happens when you hire Maury Wilson.
No, Maury, no, Maury, no, no, no. The Mariners generated quality players from the expansion draft like Rupert Jones, Rick Honeycutt, Floyd Bannister, Richie Zisk, Craig Reynolds was another one. But they couldn't afford to keep them. That was the problem. They didn't have stable ownership until 1992 when the Emmis Corporation sold the team to Nintendo. Ain't that the Emmis? The Mariners' fortune changed in 1987 with the first overall draft pick in baseball, and that was Ken Griffey Jr. 11th place at Arizona Diamondbacks with 116 points. This was a surprise to me, given their early success. They won 100 games in 1999, 92 in the World Series in 2001, and 98 in 2002, but only 51 games in 2004. Most of the key players on the 2001 Diamondbacks were actually signed as free agents. The expansion draft generated Luis Gonzalez, who they got in a trade for Kareem Garcia, and Curt Schilling, who they got in a trade for a bunch of players from Philadelphia. Their aggregate WAR was 89.4. Houston's next with 120 points. Only one 500 season in 1969, and their aggregate WAR was 71.5. The Colt 45s reaped the benefit of two players in their draft, Dick Farrell and Bob Bruce, and in 1965 they acquired Mike Cuellar in the trade. The overall output of expansion players was modest after moving from Colt Stadium into the Astrodome, and if you look at that front office picture, the fella in the front row on the left, that's a young Tal Smith. He was just inducted into the Houston Astros Hall of Fame, and he wrote the foreword to the book. Ninth place, Colorado Rockies, 120 points. They struggled in their first two seasons, and they won the wild card in 1995. Unlike the Diamondbacks, who bought a World Series title, expansion players did contribute to the quick ascent of the Colorado Rockies. Guys like Dante Bichette, Vinny Castilla, Darren Holmes, Curtis Laskanik, Steve Reed, Kevin Ritz, and Eric Young contributed a WAR of 21.2. Their aggregate WAR was 87.5.
Was that before they refrigerated the bowls?
No comment. Nobody put an asterisk on their National League title in 2007. Eighth place, the Montreal Expos. 127 points, aggregate WAR of 96.7. Anybody recognize the guy in batting practice? Charles Bronfman, yes. A fan from Montreal catches a foul ball. No winning seasons from 1969 to 1978. After going 52 and 110 in 1969, the Expos exceeded Gene Mock's prediction of 70 and 70. They actually won 73 games in their second season. The expansion draft yielded a lot of good players. Rusty Staub, Carl Morton, Bill Stoneman, Ron Fairley, and Ron Hunt. They were all either selected in the draft or acquired in trades for players selected in the draft. And they contended as early as 1973 despite posting a losing record. Amid a global energy crisis and political uncertainty in Quebec, which made the Expos put the Expos in a unique situation in the mid-70s, the Expos began an austerity program, and it was an austerity problem, actually, in 1974, the Phase 2, in which they saw Ken Singleton and Mike Torres traded to the Baltimore Orioles for Dave McNally and Rich Coggins. Now, who can tell me what team had the best overall record between 1975 and 1984? Here's a hint. They played in the city we're in right now. And in the words of Charles Bronfman, in essence, we got nothing for those two fine players. Singleton and Torres between 75 and 84, WAR of 48.3. McNally and Coggins, less than zero. And even though Torres was only with the Orioles 1 year, 1975, it generated a trade for Reggie Jackson and Ken Holtzman, which in turn generated a trade for Scotty McGregor, Rick Dempsey, and Tippi Martinez, which kept the Orioles in business well into the 80s. So, good trade for the Orioles. So did he. Seventh place, San Diego Padres, 127 points, aggregate WAR of 89.1. They finished in last place for six consecutive years. Nate Colbert had a WAR of 17.2, and they edged over the Expos because of a winning season in 1978 when they were 84 and 78. Quick story about Nate Colbert. He attended, as an eight-year-old in St. Louis, Missouri, the Cardinals game when Stan Musial hit five home runs in a doubleheader. And he was understood to have said after the game, "I can't imagine anybody else in baseball doing that. Certainly not me." Not so fast, Roland Roaster. Sixth place, the Florida Marlins, 137 points. They only had one winning season in their first 10 years, and that was 1997 when they won the World Series. And they didn't contend again until 2003 when they won their next World Series. 97 Marlins featured Jeff Conine and Gary Sheffield, both players generated by the expansion draft. Sheffield was traded to the Dodgers in a blockbuster deal for, did I actually say that, blockbuster in Wayne Huizenga? A blockbuster deal for Mike Piazza, who generated trades for Preston Wilson and Mike Lowell. Aggregate WAR 87.8. Now, the guy that they got Gary Sheffield for is one of three Hall of Famers who were selected in expansion drafts. Does anybody know the other two?
Hoffman,
yes.
Gil Hodges
is another, and who can name the third?
Ashburn.
No, Ashburn was not an expansion pick. He was selected by Kansas City and immediately traded to the Angels. Wilhelm's correct. Fifth place, Los Angeles Angels, 152 points, aggregate WAR, 129.3. Nobody expected the 61 Angels to win as many as 50 games, but they won 70, still an expansion record. A year later, with Bo Bolinski on the mound, they won 86 games, had a winning record, first place on July 4th. Jim Fregosi, WAR of 45.2 between 61 and 70. Dean Chance, who was traded from Washington, had a WAR of 20.5, and Fregosi was sent to the Mets in a trade which brought Nolan Ryan to Orange County through the 1979 season. Fourth place, Toronto Blue Jays, 167 points, aggregate WAR of 116.4. From 1977 to 1980, they averaged 58 wins. From 1983 to 1993, quick turnaround, they averaged 91 wins, five division titles, and two world championships between 85 and 93. Draft picks Jim Clancy, Garth Orge, and Ernie Witt combined for a WAR of 31.8 from 77 to 86. The draft also generated trades for Roy Howell and Alfredo Griffin. The Blue Jays would have ranked higher, but for their sterling farm system and their shrewd Rule 5 draft picks, including Paul Hodgson, Lloyd Mosby, and Willie Upshaw, seen here with Elliot Wall, who unfortunately passed away not long after the release of the book. Elliot was quite helpful in putting the book together. Third place, Seattle Pilots. Well done, guys. 188 points. The Pilots went 68-94 in their only major league season, while the Brewers remained in the doldrums of their division until 1978, when George Bamberger imported the Oriole way from Baltimore. The Frank Lade trains of the early 70s brought several talented players to Sud City, and in 1976, George Scott was traded back for Cecil Cooper, who hit .352 as a Brewer in 1980 and was there till 1987. Second place, Washington Senators, 190 points. Like the Brewers, only one winning season in their first 10 years. They owe their high rank to the acumen of their general managers to trade effectively. In 1961, the Senators traded Dave Sisler to the Cincinnati Reds for Claude Osteen. Osteen provided the Senators with a WAR of 9 from 61 to 64. He was then traded to the Dodgers for Frank Howard, Ken McMullen, Phil Ortega, Pete Rickert, and Dick Nen. They contributed a WAR of 54.2 through 1970 and generated quality players for the franchise up until 1986, when Gary Ward had left the team by now known as the Texas Rangers. Number one, Kansas City, 249 points, aggregate WAR 184.8. The Royals have Ewing Kauffman to thank for their early successes. Mr. K was not even a baseball fan, but a civic-minded billionaire who shared in Kansas City's misery in losing the A's to Oakland in 1967, when Oakland became, in Stuart Symington's words, the luckiest city since Hiroshima. Three expansion teams, the Royals, the Brewers, the Blue Jays, emerged as contenders within their first 10 years, and they were three of the top four finishers in my analysis. Expansion has been a successful experiment as American commerce and industry have shifted from the Northeast to the Southwest. Major League teams have thrived from coast to coast and in Canada. It was time for expansion baseball. And before we get to questions, Bob has asked me to say a few words about the Houston chapter, without whose participation this book would not have existed. There's Larry Durker, the namesake of the chapter. We had the book launch in Houston in November 2018. Anybody remember the weather that night? Does anybody remember what happened? It snowed, yes! In Houston, Texas. I'm sorry I couldn't replicate the weather in Houston for you. But we had Bob Aspromonte as one of our speakers that night. We had Bill McCurdy. Jimmy Wynn couldn't make it. We had Durker and we had Tal Smith. And there's Greg Lucas, who gave me the idea to do this in the first place. And Mark Wernick, who's been a friend of mine for over 20 years. Mike Vance. There's Tal Smith and Larry Durker. There's Joe, and there's Bill Brown. And that's all, folks. We have 5 minutes for questions, and if we have any more questions, Bill Nowlin and I are going to be doing a book signing in the vendor's room immediately after the lecture. We're happy to take your questions there. Barry.
I think your topic should have been, it was time for expansion baseball. I don't think currently it is time, and the reason I make that argument is that because of the pressure on pitching staffs and the numbers of relievers and the pitch count emphasis, I don't think there's a talent pool sufficient to stock more teams. I'd like your opinion on that.
I happen to agree with you. I think 30 teams might actually be too many. The semantics of the book title is actually a reference to the Dodgers and the Giants' move west and the failure of the Continental League, at which time it was time for expansion baseball. Did baseball expand too quickly? I think it probably did. A lot of that had to do with lawsuits of the A's moving to Oakland, the Pilots moving to Milwaukee, and the collusion lawsuit of 85, which was responsible for the Diamondbacks and the Rays. Bob.
Great presentation, Maxwell.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you gave any thought or consideration to the evolving rules of the draft itself in terms of how many from each team, how replacement, what happened when a pick was made and those types of things, because other leagues learned that they really evolved that expansion process as they went through it.
Oh, absolutely. The evolution of the draft changed. I mean, when the Angels and the Senators came into the league, they literally had 90 days to put the team together from soup right. to nuts. Right. Arizona Diamondbacks and Tampa Bay Rays were given 3 years, and free agency had come into play. The amateur draft had come into play. It was a completely different game. It was a completely different kind of flying. So the more modern teams did have the advantage over the earlier teams. I didn't know how you could have factored that into the analysis, but you're right. The evolution of the draft absolutely did change over those 37 years. Ruth.
That was going to be part of my question. My other half of my question is, were there any scheduling changes and sort of weight of schedule, whether it was a balanced schedule or an unbalanced schedule, that might have affected who the teams were playing and the number of wins they might have gotten?
Well, there was no interleague play before 1997, so only the Rays and the Diamondbacks would have faced teams in the other league. You had only one division up until 1968, then you had two divisions from 69 to 93, when you faced your own division 18 times and the other division 12. So certainly in the American League, you had a big imbalance between the East and the West. The East had much better teams. 1969, the California Angels finished in third place with a losing record of 71-91. So the schedule absolutely played an impact into who the teams played and how well they fared. You were next.
Either a first-place finish or success in the postseason in the point system itself? Like, you finished wins, you got points for it, but I didn't see you getting points for winning the World Series or winning the league pennant.
Well, as you know, winning the World Series and how you do in the regular season is not always a cause and effect.
Right.
I mean, 2020, the two best teams did meet in the World Series.
Right.
But the last time was 2013 when the Cardinals faced the Red Sox. Minnesota won the World Series in 1987 with a record of 85-77 after defeating a much superior Detroit Tigers team. I'm a Tigers fan, so I can say that.
Right, but I mean, that is success. I mean, that is success for an expansion team, even if they just kind of sneak into the playoffs and still win it, or any team for that matter. But that's not part of your...
It was not part of my analysis,
right.
No.
Did you consider it, is one of my questions?
No, I did not.
Okay, thanks.
Steve.
Yeah, also, the kind of related to that... said that the teams, when you listed the teams that you said contended within the first 10 years, it did not include the New York Mets, who won the World Series in their eighth season.
Well, it did include the Mets won the World Series in their eighth season, but there were almost no players left from the expansion draft on the 69 Mets.
That part did, but at one point it said, it's like the next to the last slide practically, where you've said only these three teams contended in their first 10 years.
Perennially. perennially. Alan, oh, I'm getting the signal that we're done. Can I take Alan? Alan, and then we're done.
Okay. The other interesting thing that happened was on the eve of the divisional play in 1969, the National League, to get playing balance, wound up with those two perennial Western cities, Atlanta and Cincinnati, in the Western Division, and they put St. Louis and Chicago in the Eastern Division, and promptly they wound up shooting themselves in the foot because Atlanta and especially Cincinnati became very good, and the St. Louis and Chicago did not. So you never know from day to day what's going to happen with the plans you make.
Yeah, that was because the Cubs had requested to be in the East for radio and television purposes. They thought they would draw better against Eastern teams than Western teams. You're quite right. The Dodgers and Cincinnati for most of the 70s were indeed the dominant teams of the league.